evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for July 31st, 2017. This is David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey there, David, and good evening to everyone out there. Views, comments, and questions. So you can call us at any time during the show.
I think we may be having a disconnect on Richard's end. Let me say what Richard was going to say. We have a call-in number. We welcome our callers, our listeners, to call in. It's a toll-free number. It's 1-888-627-6008. Again, grab your pen and paper. Our toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Before we bring on our special guest tonight, I'd like to thank the sponsors of tonight's show, American Legion Post 303 of Native Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles Newman of Florida, and Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents veterans in disability cases and military personnel actions. Tonight's show is dedicated to a very important issue affecting not only veterans and their families, but also civilians who live and work on or near our nation's hundreds of military installations. It is an issue of environmental pollution and toxic contamination of the drinking water, soil, and air. Our special guest tonight is Mr. Gavin P. Smith, the founder of a nonprofit organization called Civilian Exposure, which is dedicated to addressing those issues. Gavin is a 20-year veteran of media, marketing, and nonprofit entrepreneurship. He leads Civilian Exposure, a nonprofit news and outreach organization assisting civilians and veterans, basically everyone who have been exposed to contamination from military installations. He has also previously served on a number of government Camp Lejeune government assistant panels and collaborating with government agencies to promote scientific research and corrective measures for all people that have been exposed. Gavin also heads Gavin Consulting, a network of virtual experts serving global clients for their media, marketing, and management needs. Gavin holds a Master of Global Management with distinction and Beta Gamma Sigma from Thunderbird School of Global Management, an MBA from the College of William & Mary Mason School of Business, and a BA in History from Wake Forest University. Welcome, Gavin. How are you tonight?
I'm glad to be here, David. And Rick, thank you very much for having me.
Well, it's our privilege. And Gavin, why don't you begin? Well, there's a lot to talk about tonight, and we have the entire show dedicated to discussing these issues with you. But why don't we start by you telling us what led you to get involved in the issue of toxic contamination on military installations?
Sounds good. I actually, thank you again for having me. Back in 2013, I first learned about contamination in the water supply aboard Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. My father had worked there as a civilian employee for Department of Defense for 25 years, from 1973 to 1998. He retired, was doing okay, and then in later years, by 2005, 2006, started to have some issues, and by 2008 was stricken with the onset of acute leukemia. And within a couple of months of that onset, that was it. He passed away in June of 2008. And
wow.
For the longest time after that, I thought, well, we kind of had the unlucky fortune, I guess, of my father having leukemia or having a cancer. And so I thought, well, maybe it runs in the family. I better get checked myself and other things like that. And we put it behind as though, and we recovered as best we could in the family and marched on. And then, as I mentioned, in 2013, I started to really find out about this because my mother actually called me one night. She was watching the 6 o'clock local news and saw a very brief thing about water contamination in the 70s and 80s and asked about it and said, have you heard anything about this? And so I started digging through it and, pretty much, just really started to get my head around it. And once I saw all the backstory and everything, because we had never been told anything or I'd never heard of it before, really, to be honest with you. And once I started to see what was going on and started to put it together more and more and more, I started to realize that my father's leukemia could have been due to exposure. So I started to get involved with people that have been working on it for a long time and started to get the information to give me the idea and some of the science behind it. Worked, as you mentioned, in the opening with a few groups and down at the CDC. And found out, yes, your dad was definitely exposed because his office was in a building that was in the base maintenance side of Camp Lejeune. And it was literally a opposite street corner of one of the largest wells and one of the highest contaminated wells on the base with TCE and along with other chemicals like PCE, vinyl chloride, benzene as well, but mainly TCE in this particular well. And then the links, of course, with TCE and acute leukemia and other diseases became apparent in 2014 when the CDC released a study, civilian mortality study, that indicated the connection. And so I later found out, by the way, that my father's records were included in that study, which Wow. basically confirmed it for me. So at that point, I really thought that there needed to be more awareness for it. And I know a lot of been in and out of the news over the years, but if we could go and slip by and not hear about it and never be notified about it, then there's got to be others out there in the same boat. And so my view was limited at the time in the beginning to just addressing Camp Lejeune contamination because of my father. And so I went around in the community because I'm based near Camp Lejeune right now and my work, and I started to ask around, and more people said, well, I've heard a little bit about it, or I don't know much, or I don't know what to do anyway if there was even a connection. And I just felt like there needed to be more attention, and I knew I had to do something, but I didn't know what, and I'd worked in media and marketing for years and felt that maybe if I apply that to this effort, then maybe through that effort I can, and through that talent or God's gift, I could probably help out in some way. And so I formed Civilian Exposure in 2013, again with a somewhat limited view. And once I got into 2014, 2015, and started hearing from people over and over again, I started to hear all around the country. I started to do outreach and marketing. I started to get feedback. And I really became aware of the fact that, in short order, that this was not just a Lejeune problem. It's a multi-base problem. It's a systemic problem within the military. And the issue and similar chemicals have been in place in bases around the country. So that's what led me to do it, and that's what led me to continue to keep it going to this day, because it just keeps building and building as more bases are uncovered and more issues are uncovered. And the feedback that I get, I just want to make sure that I can share as much of that information as possible and try to connect as many people as possible and in some way try to help a family or so out there.
Well, Gavin, I really applaud your work. I've been a fan of your organization for quite some time. I've been a subscriber to your website, civilianexposure.org, the newsletter, which comes out very frequently and with up-to-date information. Richard Hurley and I, in our law practice, we represent veterans and their families, but not so much on the civilian personnel side. So I'm really interested in learning more, your insights. But I know we have... we've done a lot to promote tonight's show, so hopefully we have a lot of listeners and perhaps some will call in. But I know your website is just full of lots of very useful information about different installations above and beyond Camp Lejeune, but also information about legal actions, the science behind these issues, and other really current events. So why don't we start talking more about Camp Lejeune. And, as you know, earlier this year, the VA came out with its new presumptive list of 8 diseases for military veterans who are seeking disability compensation. And it's kind of in the same vein as what VA did for Vietnam veterans who were exposed to Agent Orange in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Now, this presumptive list of 8 diseases includes adult leukemia, a number of other cancers. And you mentioned your father passed away from leukemia, and his work center, the base maintenance, as I understand it, was as you described, right near one of the most contaminated Wells. What are your thoughts on what the VA's done so far and perhaps how what the VA has done as far as this presumptive list ought to be extended to civilian employees and as well as civilians who just may have lived on the base, family members or civilians that live near it? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think in terms of the presumptive, I'll just start there. I think that's a good move in the right direction. I think it's long overdue. And I think that it's good for service members, and that's where it stops, unfortunately. The
right.
Family member program that's also in existence can help service member families to an extent as well. And I believe I've had some people starting to inquire and starting to apply to that as well. But in my view, a brief view of the history of it and watching others, you know, it's been a long slog for those fighting the fight on this, especially for Lejeune. And I think, as I said, one of the laws in 2012, you know, started the ball in the right direction a little bit in terms of getting the VA to start doing something. But I found real quick when I was working with this issue a little closer that that the VA, you know, I think there's some good people in the VA, and then there's some bureaucracy in the VA. And so what they do, I think it's pretty simple. I think if you give them too wide a berth in legislation or activities, then they will fill in the gap when you're not detailed and lay it out the way they want to. And so I think that started off some of the problems since 2012 in terms of claims. For example, right after that law passed, you know, it started in the right direction, but then their claim denial rate was still around 96.4%. So it wasn't really helping a lot of people at the start of it. And so
right.
that, I think, you know, beg for, you know, a presumptive status, at least on the 8 out of the 15 originally identified conditions. And so I think it's a good step to move to that. And I think, you know, with some of the family members of service members, I think it's okay. But I think you have to really spell out in detail, not just for the VA, for the DOD in general, exactly what you want and so that it will be implemented in the right ways. And I as far as the civilian side of it, and also children born on the base, that sort of thing, there really is not a lot for them at this point. In fact, there is a Lejeune family, or I mean a Lejeune civilian employee page on the DOD website for the Department of Labor and the Office of OWCP, Workers' Compensation and Pensions, but there's not a lot there. There's not many people have filed claims on it. It's not really for anyone who's already passed. And so there's a big contingent, if you're not a service member with one of those 8 diseases, that is left out of pretty much anything from medical care to compensation to you name it. So that leaves one other avenue, and that is the legal side of things. And that, unfortunately, has been stalled, and I'm not sure if many listeners know the history of the legal side of it, but basically lawsuit filed in court, multi-district litigation, but they said that CERCLA laws for Superfund sites should overrule any sort of statute of limitations for filing suit, no matter how long afterwards you might find out that you've been exposed. Unfortunately, the DOJ a couple of years ago fought to uphold what's called the North Carolina Statute of Repose, which they argued was different from a statute of limitations. And so therefore, since CERCLA doesn't specifically intend or state statute of repose as well, that they can be under that. And therefore, you would have to have filed a suit 10 years from the date of becoming aware of the problem or from the date of last action. And so therefore, that puts everything on pause for any legal pursuits if you're a civilian or perhaps a child born on the base, that sort of thing. So it's been a slow walk with this a bit. I think the VA move with the presumptive takes it in the right direction. I hope they expand that list. I think there's a lot of science there already they could go ahead and do that, but I hope they expand that, and I hope they expand it into DOD. I would love to see DOD mimic that for civilians. And the children, basically everybody on base, and then as expand out, then blueprint that across other bases.
Right, right. I think I mean, what you've covered just reveals the complexity of all this. You alluded to the 2012 law, and I just want to kind of fill in for our listeners' benefit. And Gavin, please add your insights. But the first Lejeune law that Congress passed said that veterans and their family members could get health care benefits. They could be reimbursed for their out-of-pocket health care. They're related to any of 15 various conditions if they had served at Camp Lejeune or Marine Corps Air Station New River for at least 30 cumulative days between August of 53 and December of 87. And those 15 conditions, and I'll just read them quickly because it is important. These are for health benefits, included bladder cancer, breast cancer, which, by the way, when I mentioned breast cancer, in my part of Florida, the local media, Tampa Bay Times, had reported a lot on this. A lot of the cases that started prompting media attention, at least in Florida, and there's a lot of, keep in mind, there's a lot of military retirees, Marine retirees in Florida. That's why there's a big audience here. This was male breast cancer particularly. But what's interesting the breast cancer was one of the 15 on the list for health care, but didn't make it on the list of 8 for the presumptive for disability claims. But let me go back to the 15 for health benefits. Included bladder cancer, breast cancer, esophageal cancer, female infertility, hepatic steatosis, kidney cancer, leukemia, lung cancer, miscarriage, multiple myeloma, myelodysplastic syndromes, neurobehavioral effects, which is rather vague, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, renal toxicity, and scleroderma. Now, just earlier this year, the VA published their final regulations, which became effective in March. And we've had a few clients that have already been covered by this, include the following. And by presumptive, I mean veterans who served, whether they were at the time active duty or reservist or guardsmen. But if they served at Camp Lejeune or Marine Corps Air Station New River for at least 30 cumulative days, doesn't have to be consecutive, but cumulative days between August of 53 and December of 87, and if they were discharged from the military under conditions other than dishonorable, and they had one of the following 8, and I'll read these, then the VA will presume. It's a rebuttal presumption, which means the VA, if they really wanted to be aggressive, they could rebut that, but we haven't seen that so far. But the list includes the following 8, adult leukemia, aplastic anemia, and other myelodysplastic syndromes, bladder cancer, kidney cancer, liver cancer, multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and Parkinson's disease. So there's a big difference between the 15, which came out on Congress's list, and then when the VA regulators put out this list. So as you said, Gavin, perhaps the VA will expand that list for disability. You also mentioned the complexity of the multi of the federal court litigation. There are many cases, it seems like they've run into one obstacle after another, including, as you mentioned, the North Carolina statute of repose. It's my understanding, although I've not even been involved in that litigation, I'm not an expert, is that even the North Carolina legislature has tried to be supportive. And I'm not sure where that litigation is ultimately going to continue going, but it is very complex.
In fact, you're right. I was just going to say that North Carolina legislature did try to be supportive. They actually enacted a piece of legislation to try to apply an equivalency between statute of repose and statute of limitation language, tried to apply it retroactively, but that was ruled by the courts as insufficient. They couldn't do it. So, unfortunately, that failed.
I see. Well, it'll be interesting to see if, based on the most recent court decision, if the legislature might continue to do what they can as far as changing the state statutes to provide an avenue. I certainly don't know. There are law firms out there that are involved in that, and they would be far more knowledgeable than I am. But as far as that litigation, the fact that family members and other civilians are running into an obstacle, is really tragic. Now, Gavin, you served on the Camp Lejeune Community Assistance Panel with, there's a long acronym for this, the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, and the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the EPA, the military, and the VA. What were your impressions from working on that panel? What are your thoughts and your experiences about that?
Well, it was an interesting mixture. It was an interesting experience. You know, the people that from the community, the members in there, are very passionate about it, and have all in some way lost quite a bit in their lives. And so, it's admirable to see that side of that fight. But it was also very educational to witness some of the folks that were present, representing the Marine Corps, the VA, the EPA, and others, and as well as the ATSDR, and so typically those meetings, they would present their latest science findings there at ATSDR and CDC, and then if there was a study being conducted or a new health study being proposed, and or water modeling or those types of things, to try to get a handle on where this was progressing in general with Lejeune on the science side. Then you would have some back and forth between, you know, community members and the VA in terms of how they were handling implementing some of the laws and some of the claims process, and basically an advocacy for the community to the agencies, and then to also witness some of the responses from people, and we've had some conference calls and just so some of the bureaucracy that worked into those calls and conversations was quite fascinating. It was an interesting experience, and it helped me to really get up to speed on where this is going and really narrow down the potential solutions, but also to see, as I said, the bigger systemic problem.
Right, and I know from my readings, including your website, that we're talking about just for Camp Lejeune alone the potential of perhaps more than 1 million people that have been affected over the decades. Is that correct?
That's correct. The numbers anywhere from 900,000 sometimes are estimated to around 1 million or so. And I mean, if you think about that, for Lejeune and its facility and the workers and that sort of thing, even if you were just to roughly extrapolate that across the other 100-plus military Superfund sites just in the United States that have been listed at one time or another or are still active, even if you were to take half that number and apply it to all of those, yeah, that's quite a substantial amount of people across the country exposed to some sort of toxic exposure from the military.
Absolutely. And now, based on, again, your experience with the Camp Lejeune Community Assistance Panel and the insight you gained about dealing with those different agencies and kind of the bureaucracy, if you will, what would be your thoughts on what should the government be doing better for the benefit of family members, civilian employees, and members of the civilian community who are affected by this toxic contamination? What should the government be doing better than what they're doing now? I know that's a broad question. And
it is. There are some obvious things, and obviously we all want our government to work more quickly. I think that's the first thing. There needs to be a little more expediency involved here, because one of the biggest complaints, and I get this every day, and in fact, one of the personal stories we just shared over the weekend is titled Deny, Deny, Even After They Die. And the point of that article and the point of the frustration of so many people I hear from is that either things are denied and denied and they have to appeal and they have to reappeal or refile in the process, or the responses drag out so long that it's just not practical, especially for acute illnesses. You know, take example, acute leukemia is a prime example. You may not have 3 years to wait for a decision. You may not have 3 months to wait for that appeal. So that in itself can be a significant problem. I think in terms of honoring, you know, veterans, you know, service members, civilians, you name it, anyone who served, I think in addition to, you know, there's the medical benefit component to those who are still alive. I think there needs to be another component to those who have passed, and to those families who may have lost a lot of money fighting medical battles that without that assistance. You know, so for example, I mean, I had another letter the other day where a person has been fighting for in a, for another base issue for 25, 30 years, has already lost $1.125 million out of pocket for medical expenses. I've had other letters where people have said that they've had to remortgage their home twice. I mean, it's because, in some cases, because they've been fighting and fighting, and then the loved one dies, and then they have to still. So it becomes a burden even after someone passes on that family. So it really impacts the family well beyond you know, if the service member or civilian is impacted or even is deceased. You know, the bills involved, the stress, the everything, it just goes beyond that. So I would love to see something like that as well. And I think it just has to be, I'd like to see the government be very detailed in the approach. I think, again, I stressed that earlier and I stress it again now. I think that's where it needs to be detailed and all encompassing. I think you can't, I don't think civilians or children born at the base or veterans or service members or reservists or anyone for that matter, or somebody that worked in the commissary or, you know, just drove on and off base to work 8 hours a day or was passing through and for training for 2 weeks. I don't think you should silo any of those. I think to dividing all that up like that is just not fair. I think, as you said, if you're there 30 days, no matter who you are, you came into contact with something. Based on scientific fact there and based on the sheer number of wells involved and the level of contamination. So therefore, maybe go beyond the purview of the VA. Maybe, you know, you hear about different things set up out there, such as the 9/11 Responders Fund and, you know, things like that. There may be, and I anticipate that may even be where it's going to go as to something, you know, similar to the mesothelioma.
That's a great idea. Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt. I think that's a great idea that they you take the larger picture approach because and not silo people into different groups. I think there are a lot of bureaucratic impediments to that. I know in Congress, for instance, there's a House and Senate Veteran Affairs Committee which address veteran issues, but they're not going to address most likely. They're going to have to hand off to some other government, some other Senate and House committee, the civilian employee compensation aspects of it, and then even other committees for the environmental remedies that there might be out there, but they need to get together. And as far as your point that you know that the government, and this is certainly true of the VA's reputation of delay, deny, and wait till you die. We've seen that with you know, and many veterans, tens of thousands of veterans have died in the last decade waiting for their cases to be heard on appeal. And even though in certain situations, not all situations, the surviving spouse and dependent children could continue fighting for certain benefits, it's a long, stressful process, and we need some simplicity to make it easier for these people that have, you know, served their country, whether in uniform or civilian employees, or they were just family members who were kind of along for the ride, so to speak. You know, so can you share with us some of the other military installations? You mentioned getting letters, I assume, from across the country. What are some of the other installations maybe that jump into your mind right now where there's toxic contamination that is receiving attention or should be receiving a lot more attention than it is? Something perhaps more on the Lejeune level. Any installations
No, I was just going to say that's the big thing, and that's what's been most helpful to me. By the way, is in our newsletter we do it every week, and I solicit for stories, and keeping that conversation alive is critical for me and for the mission because it helps us to look into other things, and I work with other reporters and journalists out there so to try to find more of these stories and to bring them to light in a way that aggregates them together because it is a collective issue. And so I get so much, I get emails every day and feedback every day, so much so that I'm still digging out, quite frankly, from a batch just from July. It's just to get to as much as we can. So We've got a bunch of bases listed. Most of those have been so far brought up by people who have asked about it. So you've got obviously the issues going on right now up at Peace Air Force Base in the Northeast. You've got Chanute in Illinois. You've got McClellan. A lot of people ask about that. Obviously El Toro. There's a group in Hawaii that's contacted. I've had people lately talk about the atolls in the Marshall Islands for the atomic cleanup veterans, and I get inquiries about from Corpus Christi and the guys down there working on the helicopters and cleaning them when they come back from Vietnam for Agent Orange exposure. I've had inquiries about Aberdeen Proving Grounds. We just ran a story last week. Reran story thanks to cooperation with ProPublica to highlight burning of munitions in Virginia and some of that. I get people who ask me about brain cancer from burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. Willow Grove, Anderson Air Force Base in Guam actually is coming up, and I had a firefighter actually post a story to us recently about that we ran. I'm working with a journalist over there, John Mitchell, who writes for the Okinawa Times and also now writes with us. And he's looking into, he actually has exposed a lot about the, and uncovered a lot about all of the contamination at Okinawa and is looking into Guam right now. So there's a lot of that out there, and it's really all over. And it's not just U.S., it's overseas. As I mentioned. So we get quite a bit of stories, and that's why it really just shows me how systemic of an issue it is. And frankly, the stories that I get I hate to even use this word, this phrase, that I got lucky, or my dad got lucky. He didn't have to, his battle was not as long or as tumultuous as many people have gone through. I hate to even think that way, but to read some of these stories and to see the amount of struggle, whether it's the person it's themselves, the military member, whether it's family members, whether things have been passed on, you know, people who were born there that are finding out symptoms in their 30s and 40s of issues, and now their lives are inhibited and they're worried about their children and what they can pass on to them, potentially. It breaks your heart every day to read those stories and to know that that's out there and to such great extent.
Right, right. And I served in the Air Force myself, and back in the early 90s, one of the many legal hats I had to wear was as the environmental attorney at Seymour Johnson Air Force Base in Goldsboro. I'm sure you know where that is. And at that point, the base was spending just a ton of money every year on what they call the Installation Restoration Program, the IRP, to identify, you know, past spots of pollution, identify the extent of any pollutants, plumes, and start an expensive cleanup process. And it just struck me, you know, this is you know, in the 90s, considering the base had been around since probably at least the 40s, which is common with a lot of the installations that you mentioned. You know, they were World War II era bases, maybe some of them installations, some of them have since closed, but of course the pollution is there, and the contamination not just affecting the people that served on the base, but the local communities. I was reading one of the, when we were publicizing this show on Facebook this week, one of our readers asked questions about Wordsmith Air Force Base in Michigan, which apparently, you know, a lot of pollution and affecting the water in one of the local communities, and apparently there is an ongoing battle between the community and the Air Force about providing drinkable water. I'm not up on all the details, but as you said, it's really a nationwide and even an overseas matter. So I'd like you to tell our readers more about your website, because it's a very valuable resource, and I hope that our listeners will contribute and perhaps get involved. So, Gavin, can you tell us more about your website and what readers can find there, and perhaps what you would ask of listeners and those that can volunteer, provide financial donations, et cetera?
It's civilianexposure.org. And don't let the name fool you. It's for everybody. It's just, as I mentioned, I started it as, you know, a son of a civilian employee at the time, and it just felt like an underserved category at that time, but it really has expanded to everybody. When you go there, as you mentioned, we have information. We start out again with the flagship issue of Lejeune, but we also cover other bases. We try to look around for as many bases as possible to highlight, whether it's just to gather some basic information from EPA and Superfund level information so that it can be preserved and archived, not sure whether it's always there or changing, so we want to have the information there in a concise and digestible way to give you a one-stop look at each base and the issues surrounding it and some of the links to stories and that sort of thing. As you mentioned, different items in the news from time to time. We put some science information up there. We cover some of the health issues that are some of the prominent ones that are involved. And basically, try to cover a few things. Number one, we try to, again, highlight as many bases as we can. Number two, try to occasionally throw in an editorial to give an opinion and try to really pull together the views out there that we get so often on things and put the whole issue in perspective from time to time. But also, one of the new sections that we started just a week or two ago, really, and it's really taken off, is our Contamination Chronicles series. And people can go to the website at civilianexposure.org, or they can go through our social media channels. I'll talk about those in a second. And you can go to our drop-down that says Action. And if you click on Share Your Story, basically your name and information and your story. And what we do is we post those anonymously under the Contamination Chronicles. And basically, if you'll just share your experiences, regardless of whatever base it is, the specific issue, and because we found that by really digging into that from a personal level, we found that other people may have also had that same experience or a similar experience at that base. And if one story can be shared for others out there to see, maybe they can start to put together and piece together their issue and relate to it, or at least say, well, that sounds like something, similar to what my dad had. Maybe I should look into this. And so we've had a lot of great feedback on that, and so we've gotten tons of stories all over, and a lot of those on the topics that I mentioned earlier. And what we also want to do as we go long term, we've got a lot of social media. We're online everywhere. So Facebook is facebook.com. Just search for Civilian Exposure, or you can just do / Civilian Exposure ORG is the Facebook page, and then Twitter at Civilian Exposed instead of Exposure Exposed. And again, those are our main outlets, and we try to put a lot of archive information up on Twitter and to keep that out there as well and keep everybody up to date. And then you can also sign up for our email newsletter. We do it weekly because just so much is coming in. We want to try to make sure we get something out there on a regular basis. Every Thursday it goes out in email, and we don't overload it with any junk. It's just basically the stories of the week to share with everyone who may have missed it, as well as some of the comments we get and some of the smaller, shorter stories and some of the inquiries, as well as some links to past stories and issues and things that are out there in the news, and a couple of links to some resources. So we encourage people to share that around as much as possible to really build up that core group of subscribers. And there's no cost to any of it. And so that's how we operate so far. And then in terms of funding, what we want to do is we're primarily at this. I'm concerned is that I don't want to raise money off people who have been impacted. I don't feel it's right. I don't feel it's necessary. I think that, a lot of people, they'll put up things and ask for donations to things, and I just don't feel right about asking someone who's already suffered so much hardship with these issues and so much financial hardship to then go back to them and say, can you give us something to then turn around and do with to others. I mean, and it's great if people want to do that, but I want to look outside and really expand the issue to the general public to say, look at this. This is what's going on. If you're concerned about Flint, Michigan, or if you're concerned about the Colorado River, or if you're concerned about other contamination issues, like Gen X in Wilmington, North Carolina is a hot topic, by the way, at present. So if you're concerned about those issues on a broader scale, look at this and look at what these people are really going through, and then, you know, help us out. But mainly what I want to do is right now I'm looking for grant funding and that sort of thing. Keep it out of, keep it in that realm, to expand this, to go beyond the reporting and the research, to get more of that out there, to really speed things up on a national level, but also to develop a couple of programs. Real quick, a doctor education program. And the reason I mentioned this one is because I found two things real quick about this is that, number one, sometimes even in the VA, in the system, they don't let everybody know what's going on very fast. So I've had people who tell me stories. They walk into a VA in another state, they mention Camp Lejeune, and the person they talk to has never heard of it, which shouldn't be the case within the VA system, but we get stories like that. I also find that in the civilian sphere, if you can't go to a VA hospital, or even whether you're a service member or a civilian or dependent, and you're going to your private doctor, they may not know to screen certain things for you because they are not aware of it either. A lot of local regional doctors are not aware of the problem and the extent of military contamination. So if we can try to have seminars and educational programs to get the word out into that segment, then we can reach those who have yet to hear about it or don't understand what to look for, and then that doctor can be mindful just by thinking, okay, you worked at Camp Lejeune during those years, let's just check on this, and then maybe that'll help them out. And then the other program would be also to do more of a direct funding approach to help people in need with their medical expenses, to actually set up a fund, almost like the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, where they help reimburse medical expense. I'd love to be able to provide direct help to people. I know that with the VA and other programs and the things that are developing for Lejeune and other bases are coming along and trying to help, I think, you know, I would love to be able to help out in, as an added resource, even if it's just a small amount, to be able to make direct impact.
I think that's a terrific idea because, you know, sometimes there are a lot of people just wait for the government or think the government should be doing it, and maybe the government should be doing it, but we know the government doesn't act very promptly. So setting up a fund, and I fully understand and agree with your point about people that have been affected, victimized by this, and have lost family members, have been ill themselves from this, lost their jobs. They may not be able to afford to contribute, but there are certainly organizations out there, whether they're larger, long-established veteran groups or other groups that are concerned with environmental things. And I think you made an excellent point, too, that it's the civilian community at large has an interest in this because, you know, most military installations are often one of the largest employers in their communities. And that's really proven easily by the fact that anytime you want to close one of these military installations, the local community is up in Congress shouting about how much of a financial impact it's going to have. So people have, in the community, they have an interest in making sure that for their own community's benefit, not just the economic impact of the installation, but the environmental impact, that it's not harming the local community. And you mentioned, I think, earlier about Naval Air Station at Fallon, Nevada. I was reading recently how in 1 5-year period in the local town only has 8,000 people, and they had 16 children diagnosed with leukemia when the national average would be one case every 10 years. They had 16 cases in 5 years. So it's not just the economic impact people need to be aware of, but it's the environmental impact, and people are getting sick and dying because of it. So I really applaud all that you're doing. I think your point about educating doctors is important because those are the ones that sign the medical nexus or connection statements that are used by veterans and would be needed as experts in litigation. But there needs to be some simplified process. And in addition to that, I think what you're doing is, Gavin, is super important in just bringing awareness to this issue. Now, that's an important starting point. Now, aside from financial donations, Gavin, how can people help your organization as volunteers? I know you mentioned about contributing stories, which is very important. Can your organization benefit from volunteers in other ways?
Yeah, absolutely. A couple of ways right off the bat. Helping get the word out, helping us get the word out through social media and through sharing our newsletters, and also through, as you mentioned, volunteering the stories. And one other way would be, and I've had a couple of requests for this lately, and I think it's a pretty good idea. I would love it if there were any sort of veteran service organization or members or people out there with claims experience. That could help us help those in need of assisting them to get their claims kind of expedited and do it in the right way. Really just helping people navigate the process quicker with their help. So if there are folks out there that have that experience for years that would like to help out in that way, that would be welcome. I could connect them up with people. I know that people could go to certain VSOs for something similar to that, but sometimes we get direct requests for it, and we love to have that help to get them directly to them, so they don't have to jump through too many hoops to get that assistance. So
I think that's important, very important. And if I could just share one story real quickly about VA claims, earlier in the show we talked about how Congress had passed a law in 2012 saying if you have one of 15 different diseases, you can get health care or reimbursement out of pocket. But when they decided on which of those diseases, they narrowed it down to 8 for disability compensations for veterans. It's, the list basically cut in half. But Richard Hurley and I had a case last year in which the veteran had some disabilities which were on the longer list. They didn't make it on the shorter list, but he did suffer documented psychological harm. Depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress as a result of this entire experience of having been exposed and finding out that at the time he was there, the Marine Corps had already learned of the contamination, but it was still a number of years before the wells were shut down, that his disability claim was granted for a secondary disability of the mental conditions, which were secondary to the health. So it sounds a bit complicated, perhaps, but the point is, With some open-minded thinking, you can really and fairly compensate a person, or at least make some effort to better compensate for all the harm that people have suffered, and the impact on the veteran and the family are just significant. So,
well, I'm glad you brought that up too, because there's been a little confusion with the presumptive. Some of the media stories that came out initially about it, They made it sound like, oh, big $2.2 billion payout to Marines and that sort of thing, to make it sound like some cash compensation as opposed to disability benefits and that sort of thing, and how it's really going to be spread over 5 or 10 years and for certain people that apply under presumptive. And I think a lot of people also misinterpret that to think that, oh, well, it's just the 8 conditions now. If I have any of the others, forget it. No, by all means, if you have any of the other 7, from the law of 2012, go ahead and get in the claims process, file a claim, see if you can work that, as you just mentioned. And even if you don't have anything within those 15, but something that may be on the fringe or on the cusp or something, because as new illnesses are discovered and added, I think it never hurts to put yourself in the pipeline, especially if it's something that's a bit serious and no family history of. I think, it's better safe than sorry to at least get on there, at least get on the Lejeune Registry so that you can have a hand in that fight, so to speak. But you also brought up one other thing, the economic impact, just real quick. I think the bases, I think the military is a great thing for the community, and I don't think the goal is to, with all of this, no matter what the ultimate outcome is to shut bases down or run the government dry of funding to pay for everything. I think the point is, because the bases are a great benefit, they're a great benefit for our country, for the military. Also, as you said, brings a lot of economic benefit to the community. Frankly, my father would have got a job when he first moved here because of the base. So in that sense, it provided an economic opportunity for him to rise up, in the community himself. And so, I don't think that's necessary. I think, and the cost involved, I think, look at the big picture. I think if the government would just step up and take care of everyone the right way, I think you hit it off now versus letting it get worse, because I believe personally that if they had just addressed these issues the minute they learned about it in the proper ways, they probably would have saved a lot more money than to drag it as long as they're doing.
Right. And I think, too, that the more there is awareness of this issue, the more people will realize the importance of, workplace safety, environmental protection rules, that there really is a health reason behind these things. And 2020 hindsight is always a lot better, obviously. And a lot of these military bases, we're talking about 40s, 50s, 60s, before environmental standards were what they are today. But certainly from this point forward, this sort of awareness hopefully should be motivating the military to be doing the right thing all the time. And I, having been an Air Force lawyer myself dealing with environmental issues, I realize that there are a lot of limiting factors that can make that easier said than done. But I think your organization is doing great work, Gavin, and we thank you very, very much for being on our show. Before we wrap up, any last thoughts, Gavin, and just one more reminder where listeners can get more information?
Absolutely. And to your last point, I think the awareness is critical. And I think that is playing a part in the PFC issue that's popping up with firefighting foams across the country, by the way. So I hope with all the awareness, it helps prevent future issues. I think, as you said, hindsight 2020, but maybe if we can start to build up the heat on this a little bit to where future issues become less of an issue, then I think that's important. Again, civilianexposure.org. Go there, take a look. We try to update everything, share your stories, let us know about your experience, no matter what base it is. Or if you have any questions about Lejeune or any other base, claims, anything like that, let us know. We'll do our best to track it down for you. We appreciate everybody out there and all the support, whether it's on social media or on the website. And, of course, I really appreciate this opportunity to talk about this issue with you guys tonight.
Thank you very much, Gavin Smith, for being on our show. And, Gavin, you have an open invitation to be on our show anytime in the future. Just give me a call or send me an email so you can continue to update and share your information, your insight with our listeners. So thank you again, Gavin, and have a good evening.
Thank you, you too.
Thank you. And we're about time for us to wrap up the show for this evening. So, again, I'd like to thank all of you for listening to our show here on BBS Radio. Thank our special guest tonight, Mr. Gavin Smith. Thank again our sponsors of the program, American Legion Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles Newman and Corey and Hurley Law Group. Thank our producer, Mr. Doug Newsom. And thank all of you for listening to our show. We'll be back next Monday evening, same time, same station. So that's our show for tonight. Please tune in again next week for another great show on veterans issues. Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week, when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.